to From Believing to Being, a podcast about pursuing meaningful spirituality after faith deconstruction. We're your hosts.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Dave.
We're two former evangelicals having an ongoing conversation about what life and spirituality look like after letting go of our religious beliefs. Join us as we discuss deconstruction, Christianity, mysticism, enlightenment, and consciousness, and most importantly, how to experience this new way of being in the midst of parenting, careers, and going about our everyday lives.
If you've recently left your faith or simply feeling pulled into a deeper way of being, we hope this podcast will encourage and inspire you and really just reassure you that you're not alone on this journey. Welcome back, everybody, to episode 7. This week, we are right in the middle between Christmas and New Year's. Many people are, and ourselves included to some degree, are thinking about the new year, new beginnings. For some reason, what we're thinking about this week is surrender. And, you know, how can we implement this big, pervasive concept and theme of surrender? What does it mean to our lives? So, Karen, what arises for you first comes to mind when you think of this heavy, heavy topic of surrender?
Well, it's definitely feels really relevant. I have a couple of decisions that are coming up that will definitely have an impact of some sort on my family. And so I've been, you know, sort of trying to figure out how to approach those decisions from this new place of where I am. Like, how do I stay in this place of awareness and make a conscious decision? Just coming from everything that I've learned this last year, it's been a huge year of personal growth for me. I want to move forward from that space. And so the idea of surrender, it's like, gosh, It's been such a big part of this last year, but also I feel like I'm still learning what it means and how to incorporate it into my life.
Yeah, there's several is probably not even the right word. So many opportunities in life to do this, right?
Yes. It's like, I mean, every day.
It's like we get over whether it's big picture, whether it's day to day. You know, it's like we get over a hurdle, a threshold in life and feel good. And then a few months later, a few days later, whatever it is, the next challenge arises for us to consider. Is this something we need to surrender in, or what does surrender look like in this situation? Rather than, it's not like a specialized tool that you use the same way in every season of life. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like, and I think something we talked about, right, is that we talked about this being an episode for this podcast, but really it's more a theme. It's just something that will play into so much of what we do. You know, even as we are recording this right now, my thoughts are a surrender to the flow of our podcast, right? It's not like I have a game plan and an agenda of here's exactly what we should talk about, here's the words that we should use, like a speech or something like that. It's just truly surrendering to the flow of wherever the conversation goes.
Yeah. So in leading up to this, I was trying to think back to when I first started feeling the need to surrender. So, you know, my deconstruction really started happening like November of 2019. And looking back, I can see that that experience was a surrendering of my doubts, like actually giving into all of the doubts that I had been having for a long time. At the moment, I didn't see that. Like, I didn't know what the hell was going on. So looking back, I can see that that was surrender, but at the time I didn't know it. And then after that, it feels like that first year was really trying to make sense of what I was experiencing, you know, reading Merton and like the Christian mysticism and all that kind of stuff. And so this last year, I think, was the first year that I really started to feel like the surrender stuff was coming into play. And I think probably the biggest thing was when I had always loved to write, and then it started feeling like the writing was getting harder and harder and harder. And I had this sense that my writing was being taken away from me by God or the divine intelligence or like whatever I, you know, whatever I thought at that point. Then that was where I felt this huge sense of resistance. Like, okay, I'm willing to let go of my beliefs in God. I will change my beliefs in Jesus. I will start letting go of some of the ideas that I have about myself, but my writing, like, don't take my writing. That's who I am at my core. I'm a writer. And that was where I really noticed resistance. And then gradually it was like, okay, I guess I just have to let it go. And at that point, I think the idea of surrender, I was like, oh, I started to become more aware of that. And then over the course of this last year, it continued to pop up in different ways. But I think the writing, like the loss of my writing is how I saw it, was my first big awareness of what surrender was going to be like in this new space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sort of a allowing for the change to happen, the change in who you are amidst even something that is so core. I mean, I think that's a significant part. So to unpack what you just said in a way, it's like, okay, so letting go of your belief about God, about Jesus, about all these formative religious ideas about transcendence, not as core to your identity is how I understand that, right? But yeah, then writing, like you probably would have said, and maybe still do to a degree, that you are a writer. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not a writer to the same degree, but again, that's one of the things we initially connected on, right? Is that both bloggers to some degree and enjoy expressing ourselves through writing and unpacking deep topics through writing. And I was the same way for a while. I was like, I'm a writer first and everything else next. It was so important to me because creativity is so important and how we channel our creativity. So that is, and so, yeah. So your surrender experience there was almost like kicking and screaming, being forced to let go of something that was so crucial to who you were.
Yeah. I think one of the differences for me is that I was a writer before I was a Christian. Mm. My mom taught us to read when we were really little. And basically from the time that I could, I was writing. Like, you know, we had poems, like I would tell my mom a story and she would write it down for me when I was like, you know, 3 or 4. I was writing poems when I was 5.
Wow.
I
want to read some of those.
Right. I mean, I remember like waking up, I was probably about 10, waking up and having a fully formed poem in my head.
Wow.
And that's amazing. So when it felt like I was not able to write, there was a lot of resistance. But what about you? Like, do you feel like the surrender thing has always been part of your journey, or did you see it in a new way once your deconstruction happened? Or like what role, I guess, like when did you first realize that surrender was a theme or an ongoing experience in your journey?
I don't know when it was first prevalent, but I will say it's been extremely formative through different experiences that I've had. So I guess I'll start there with, there was a couple of really groundbreaking occurrences in my life that surrender was the linchpin to those experiences. So probably about 6 years ago was the first time, one of the first times that I really had this sense that God was real. And God is what I would have defined it back then. Now the word I tend to use is transcendence, just something that transcends our normal day-to-day life, our physical reality. anyway, the two experiences actually were both related to, I guess, call it romantic life, my dating life. So I was single and pretty lonely in times for probably 3 or 4 years after college. And 2015 is when I was starting to kind of come out of a little bit of a pit in life and actually started dating this girl. We were introduced through my aunt, actually. So it's kind of a blind date, but really connected. I really liked this girl, but it was tough. Like in hindsight, she wasn't as interested in me as I was in her. And you know, one thing led to another. We were kind of seeing each other off and on for several months. And it finally got to the point where I wanted to, quote, DTR. You know what DTR means?
Yeah, determine the relationship.
Yeah.
Define the relationship.
Yeah, exactly. And I was so anxious. I was so freaking anxious. And it was probably like early in a week, so like say Tuesday or Wednesday, where I kind of said to her, hey, I want us to move forward, but I don't want to be in this wishy-washy state anymore. So I really want us to be official. And she said she needed to think about it. And I just said, hey, you know, just do me a favor and give me an answer by this date. I think I said Sunday. So I gave her like, I don't know, half a week or something like that. I was impatient, obviously, but I remember feeling so anxious. And then Saturday comes around and I said, you know what? I have to let this go. I have to just let go of this anxiety and just trust. So that was a surrender. In hindsight, that was me saying, I am surrendering whatever happens here. And I am getting to a point where I will be okay with whatever happens. And the next day, I had recently gotten involved or started to going back to church at that time. I'll never forget, I was driving home from church. I have no idea what church was talking about. But as I was driving home from church, this powerful spiritual experience happened where I sensed deeply in every part of my being this voice affirming to me that I was loved unconditionally, no matter what. Totally unexpected, seemingly nothing to do with what was happening. But it was really fascinating that in this moment, I had this surrendered, like, I'm okay with whatever happens. And then on the outset of it, or on the other side of it, this transformative experience of experiencing transcendence and this divine love like I had never had before. And I have never had since. It was only about like a 10 to 15 minute kind of awakening type of experience. And then the only other one I'll share that was the same season of life and very related and very formative to my understanding of surrender was similar with dating. So it ended up that the girl wasn't interested in pursuing anything. But it's funny how when I tell this story, I often just leave that part out because it's really not important. Like what's important to me is that was one of the most palpable experiences of transcendence or God I've ever had. And it came through this surrendered posture. And then a few months later, I was still in the dating game, still trying to find a suitor, right? And it was really stressful for anyone listening. And Karen, I'm sure you know, and we all know, like, dating sucks.
Dating sucks.
I got to a point where I said, screw it. I am okay with whatever happens. I just surrendered it all. It wasn't just something that I said. It was a fully embodied surrender that I said, I am okay with whatever happens. If I'm single my entire life, I am fine with it. I just reached this point where I had no issue whatsoever with whatever happened. I was just going to be with it. So I got to that point. And then probably within 2 to 3 weeks later, I was introduced to who is now my wife through a blind date. So it was just so funny how I got to this point. And it's like, it was almost like it was the working of spirit to chip away and chip away at my incessant need to be in control of what was happening. And the point that I just really let go and gave up control is when exactly what I wanted came. So those are the two most formative experiences. It all happened again 6 years ago. And we can definitely talk about how my perception of surrender has kind of evolved from there. But it all kind of goes back to that. Is to me, there is something more that is calling us to just let go and allow it to operate, whether we call that it, God, life, transcendence, spirit, whatever we call it, it's just asking us to trust and let go. Mm-hmm.
As you were talking, it reminded me of that surrender. It's an energetic release, right? It's an energetic release. And I'm not necessarily into like the clearing your chakras or whatever, but there is an emptying of energy that comes. And then it's like, once you clear out that energy, which I would understand now almost as resistance, like, which we'll talk about more too. But once you let go of all that energy that is being held up and like trying to control everything, once you open and release, it's like you make space for something new to come in. Like you create an openness, you allow an openness. You're just more receptive to things that might've been there all along, but that you couldn't see, or that you're receptive to a new person or a new idea or a new experience. Meister Eckhart, there's a book, Meditations for a Restless Heart. It's kind of like an interpretation of some of his writings, but he talks about it a lot. This, most of the time he writes about God, but it's like, you have to let go of all of your ideas and all of your concepts. It's not until you make space inside of yourself that something new, a new experience or a new understanding can come in, you know. Or we might even say too, that if awareness is there in that empty space, if you've covered all of it up, you can't be you can't access that deeper awareness if it's being covered up by all of your expectations and hopes and desires or fears or all of that kind of stuff. And so I love how you said that, you know, after each one of those surrenders, you let go, there was an openness, and then there was a flowing in of something, like a flowing in of God's love or of a new experience.
Yeah, I love the metaphor that you're painting there of removing blockages to the resistance surrender paradigm. Is that these different expectations or desires can so often, not that desire is a bad thing, but it can very easily be a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And these, I'm just envisioning these desires and expectations being these little clots blocking from the source that is this very bright, luminous light. It reminds me, so you're familiar with A Course in Miracles?
So I have been seeing it come up everywhere, but I have never looked at it. I looked it up. It's like a long, it's like an 8 or 12 week thing. It's like a 600 page book or something crazy. So I've never read it, but I've seen it come up fairly often.
Personal anecdote here is I have the book and some supporting docs. I really haven't spent that much time with it. Personally, I know plenty of people who've been transformed by it. Oh, and Eckhart Tolle has a lot of references to it. So Eckhart Tolle, if you're listening and you don't know by now, Eckhart Tolle is my guy. I love him. But anyway, Eckhart Tolle references him a lot, or references Course in Miracles a lot. And it's the overall premise is that it was kind of a channeling by spirit, or it was channeling by these people. They were channeling spirit through the whole thing. But basically the whole book was channeled by a higher power, by God. And they basically take the Christian message, Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, all these very Christian symbolic terms, and take it to a more non-dual framework.
Okay.
So it's really interesting. But anyway, the main reason I bring it into this is there's a cool introductory video where they kind of talk about, here's what A Course in Miracles is all about. So this big 600 some odd page book that's influenced probably millions of people over the last 50 some odd years. The overall premise is exactly what we're saying. The true essence of who we are is pure love. The objective is to find what is blocking that love and get it out of the way. and release those things. It, like you said, it's release of those blockages to allow for love to be able to be seen, essentially, in experience. It's really important to point that out, though. That is a premise of this super significant book, and it's exactly what we're talking about. So really, such a significant topic.
So last summer, I was trying to launch a coaching website, and I had the opportunity to work with this marketing guy. And so he was like, oh, you need to write, like, you need to make a lead magnet. You need to write an ebook. Prior to that, I had been thinking about the mind and how it's like layers of the ocean. And I was thinking about all of the different layers of the ocean. So you have like the sunlight layer, which is the surface. And then you have the middle layer. And then you have the midnight layer or something, which is the deepest, darkest part of the ocean where hardly any life survives. And so for some reason, I was like on this kick with the ocean. And so I was curious, is there any animal that can survive in all of the different layers? Because once you get down to like the deepest part of the ocean floor, it's strangely volcanic in a way. Like you have these really cold portions, but then you also have these like hot little pockets of steam that come up and everything. So, and there's not very much food. So it's like, what is there, is there a creature that can survive in all the different layers? And I was amazed because there is. So the jellyfish, just like, and this was like what my ebook was about, which is hilarious, but the jellyfish is the only creature that can survive in all of the different layers of the ocean. And what I found so fascinating is that the jellyfish moves by closing up its body and then opening. If it doesn't open, it will drown, it will sink, like it can't move. When I was thinking about just my different life experiences, it's like, and we use the phrase, I'm trying to hold it all together, right? It's like we can feel the tension in our body, whether it's trying to hold beliefs that can be in conflict sometimes, whether it's trying to hold together a perception of ourselves, whether it's trying to hold onto a dream that we desperately want to come true, or trying to hold things together because we're afraid of what might happen if it falls apart. Like we're, you know, we're all basically walking around like clenched up jellyfish. And the only way for a jellyfish to move and to be able to survive in any layer of the ocean is to constantly be letting go. And so it's like, we you have that beautiful image of the jellyfish, right? It's like this, like we were saying, this beautiful, luminous, weird, amazing creature, but the thing that allows it to survive in any circumstance is its ability to take in and to release, and also to stay mushy. That gelatinous, unstructured thing allows it to sustain pressure. And I was just overwhelmed by what an amazing example it was for us of how we can survive whatever circumstances are thrown at us. Like, don't harden up to anything. Like, constantly be in the habit of opening up and letting go. Like, how much can you take all this stuff in, but then you've got to let it go? The jellyfish to me is such a weird reference, but it's such a beautiful example of constantly surrendering to the flow, like the literal flow of the ocean. A little science lesson for us.
No, I like that. And I definitely want to tease that out more. What's arising for me is a few days ago now that James Webb telescope launched.
Yes.
Right? Uh-huh. Huge, like Hubble 2.0 that'll supposedly be 100 times the value of Hubble in terms of our exploration of the universe.
Yes. Could change everything that we know.
Yes. And so what's arising though is we're so good. We as humanity are so good at looking up and thinking of things above the surface. When we think of animals that we relate to, so often it's animals of the air, right? It's very rare that we think to explore the ocean. And I mean, there are parts of the ocean that we as a species know much less about than space.
Yes.
So I love that go there with this and think of the jellyfish as a great example. So anyway, I just think that's a point of significance to point out. But yeah, I definitely want to tease that out a little bit more because I think there is something to learn there. So how do we, I don't know, how do you think we become more like a jellyfish? What kind of things can we as humans do to better embody that resilience and strength of a jellyfish?
So one of the other things that I thought was so cool, and I am not an expert in jellyfish by any means, but the jellyfish apparently is one of the only creatures, or maybe the only creature, that has a 360 degree view. Like, you can see in all directions. And that to me is probably comparative to awareness, you know, because awareness is sort of that thing of how can I take a step back and just sort of be open to everything around me. And I know for me, you know, when I was a Christian, I was closed off to a lot of stuff. I refused to allow certain things to come into my awareness because I was afraid that it might lead me astray, or, you know, something like that. But now I am in a place where I am willing to take in all sorts of information and ideas, and then I can filter through them as I want to, but I'm so much more open. So I thought that was one thing that was kind of, you know, that was kind of cool, is just like being willing to look at everything around you. And the other thing that I love about the jellyfish is that it only sees in terms of light and dark. What is really beautiful in that is that there's so many gradients. If you only see in terms of light and dark, very rarely is something ever 100% light or 100% dark, right? Nothing is ever black and white. There's a million shades in between. And for me, it is a reminder to not judge, right? To not be judgmental. And for me too, that's one of the things with resistance. Whenever I notice myself, like my stomach clenching up whenever I think about going back to work or putting my kids in public school or having a conversation or going someplace, whenever I feel that, like that clenching that now I can recognize as resistance, I don't judge it. I just let it be, because I know that there's never anything that is 100% good or 100% bad or 100% right or 100% wrong. Like, we live in the gray 99.9% of the time. And the jellyfish to me, like, that's a good reminder, is that it only sees in terms of light and dark. Like, it's never a judgment about it. It just is recognizing what is, and that there's a whole gradient there, just like there is for us in life.
Yeah, that ability to take something in and let it be, allow for something to influence our experience, positive, negative, whatever shade of gray it is, but not latching onto it, but just allowing it to be. And I think I say latching onto it, but I think we can depict latching onto something as making a judgment about it. So yeah, latching on, like our brain latching onto something and making a definitive conclusion about something. And so it may be transforming it. So saying it's whatever the experience is in life, whatever shade of gray it may be, we make a judgment about it being black or white, right? It's either good or it's bad.
Yeah.
Some sort of duality that our, mm-hmm. our minds tend to put onto things. Yeah. Letting go of that can be really helpful. And maybe the jellyfish analogy breaks down here a little bit, but to go off of that 360 degree view and being able to see in all these different shades of gray, it's like being able to embrace the different shades of gray allows for the view, allows for the 360 yes. degree view, because it's so often when we come about judging things, we enter a place of more narrow-mindedness, that we yes. know conclusively what the right judgment is on something. Mm-hmm. And then what are we missing? So we're limiting our view, our 360 view, by turning that gray into black and white.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good way of thinking about it. And yeah, I mean, the jellyfish is inspiring, but I think there's so many other things to look at it too. Like, I was thinking about it one day when my kids were building a marble run. With marble run, you're supposed to like you know, drop the marble down and then it goes through all of these different tubes. And it's really cool how you can set it up a variety of ways, but every once in a while a marble will get stuck and then there's no more, there's no more flow. Like it doesn't work anymore. And, you know, if you think of every moment as a marble being dropped down into the marble run, if you latch onto something, or if you start resisting something in the moment, then our thoughts that latch onto an idea of something as being good or bad, or if you're in a situation where you're like, oh my God, I don't want to be here. This is, oh, this is so awful. It's like a marble getting stuck. And then life can't flow freely through you. And I guess I was thinking about this morning, that surrender, a definition for me, or at least like maybe a place to start for me, would be the absence of resistance. And that, you know, that the ultimate would be for the experience of life to flow freely through us, just like water, like flowing through your body, you know, without getting stuck on any of those, in any of those spots. And I think that's why like the marble run is good for me to think like, okay, you know, where, like, do I have a belief or something that is sticking and like preventing life from flowing effortlessly through me? Or with a jellyfish, it's like, you know, where am I clenching so tightly around an idea or an emotion or an attachment that I need to relax that? And the power, the cool thing too about the jellyfish, I guess going back to that, is that the jellyfish's power comes in the letting go, not in the closing up. It comes in the releasing of everything. That is what actually propels it forward. And so if you think about that for us, you know, kind of like what we were saying earlier about the energetic release, the full surrender and everything that you, you know, that you experienced, that's where the power comes in. The power comes in the opening up. If we can let life flow freely through us and not get stuck and attached or clenched around these different ideas and judgments, that's where the power is.
Yeah. Kind of getting ourselves out of the way of the greater unfolding of life. And I love your definition. It's funny, as you were saying that, I every once in a while I'll jot down a note while we're talking, just to organize some of the thoughts going on. But anyway, the one I wrote is surrender equals non-resistance or non-attachment, right? So it's interesting, like surrender is a positive thing in the way of like you're doing something, but so often it can be more helpful to think of it as what you're not doing. And surrender is a is a non-attach, it's a non-resist. And I think it's important to clarify that for listeners. You and I definitely understand that what we're talking about here, but surrender can often be understood as waving the white flag, or in a religious term, it's surrender to the will of God. And I understand that differently now. I could still jive with that way of saying it, but I understand it completely differently. But I think it's important to point out that we're not talking about this religious type of surrender where we just like bow down at the feet of some external deity and keep that external relationship. To me, I see it kind of what you're saying is this dissolving ourselves into the flow of life and finding whatever it is that's resisting that flow and trying to get it out of the way to further go into that, that flow.
Yeah. So yesterday you messaged me that like Wikipedia definition of surrender, which was, it was something like, you know, giving up your rights and your will to a higher power, and everything in me was like, no, just such like a visceral reaction to that. But I sat with it and I was trying to think, you know, one, why did I react that way? And how would I say that what I've experienced now is different from that? And so I started going back through my mind of like the different times when I felt like I was surrendering. And I think one of the biggest differences for me was that it feels like surrendering to the deepest knowingness part of myself and not something external not like there's, you know, a God out there pulling puppet strings and am I in his will? And I'm not seeking to appease anyone else, or like, I'm not seeking any sort of approval. I just have this very deep sense in me of that I'm surrendering to that inside of myself, not something outside of myself. And two, what I noticed, it took me a while, but as I was going through the different moments that I've felt that surrender stuff a lot, I realized that in every single instance that I could think of, ultimately what I was doing was letting go of all resistance to the present moment, to like what actually was in my life. I just felt this deep awareness that I needed to surrender my striving with my blogs. Like I had these two websites and I was like, how can I make money off of this website? And how can I become a coach and, you know, and monetize and market my coaching services with this website? And there was so much striving and it all felt good. It felt like I was working towards a dream and I was going to be changing things for my family and all this kind of stuff. And then I felt this like, you need to let it go. And now I can see that when I did surrender, all it was basically doing was like, look at your life right now. Like be in the present moment, be in the life that you actually have and are living. And every single instance I could look back on, it was all just saying, come back to the present moment. Let go of all resistance to what actually is at this very moment in your life. It's like the power of now, right? Mm-hmm. Our favorite book, The Power of Now.
Yeah, that's great. Something arising is the telescope versus the microscope. And I'll say that the telescope and the microscope are two very powerful ways to surrender. And what you just shared is what you would call the microscope, right? Like really zoning in our attention to this moment in a way you couldn't define it as something very, very small, because really it is an infinite, eternal thing. If you think about what the present moment is, it's always unfolding. In the sake of metaphor here, it's a very tiny, precise view of things. And then the telescope is thinking of the vastness of things. And that is actually something that has helped me in this space of surrender. And I'll say that ultimately, yes, we do reach the present moment and just dwell there. How it's helpful for me is to think of the vastness of everything. You know, we so often get focused in our little day-to-day life, our body, our mind, our relationships, our job, our financial situation, whatever it is, that is all consuming of our awareness. And yet, what are we? I mean, it goes back to that, who am I question. I mean, we are the universe. There's no doubt about that. That's not even an esoteric thing, really. It's just like, we are literally matter that is existing in the universe. So we are just part of that. And so to me, it's helpful to understand surrender as acknowledging my place in the universe and just saying, you know what? That's it. I am going to allow myself to just be part of the ever unfolding universe and see what happens, and not make these demands of like, well, this is how my life experience should go, even though the entire universe is unfolding just as it's going to unfold. And so it's kind of a letting go of controlling your own life situation with the realization that like, I am part of something beyond the magnitude of what I can comprehend. And so that's where I think the religious language actually can be helpful, because it is that the universe, this grand thing, could be deemed as a higher power, right? It's not something that is separate from me. I am a part of it, but it is bigger than the me that is so often trying to figure life out. Mm-hmm. So again, to go back to that word, I think I used a lot last time we met or a few times ago, was destabilizing. It kind of destabilizes our of typically engaging with the world around us and brings us to the present moment, right? Because we realize, well, I might as well just be here right now rather than off in my mind worrying about the future or the past or all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This morning I was laying in my bed and I was thinking about all of the earth underneath me and trying to walk through in my head, like if you were to, you know how, what is it called? Like whenever you like slice something in half so you can look inside of it. There's a word for that. I forget what it is. But anyway, I was thinking like, okay, if you sliced the earth in half, like right, you know, right alongside my bed, what would the layers look like? And I was, it's a weird mind trip to imagine the ridiculous amount of space above you, right? Because then you get into like galaxies and stuff. And also like the amount of space underneath us that we walk on every day and we don't even give a second thought. And I was like, I wonder, like, what is on the other side of the earth from New Mexico? I was like, I need to look at the globe and see if I can figure out like how, what that would look like. But yeah, I love that, what you're saying, because it's true. It's like, sometimes we do need to be really focused in on the present moment of what our life is as we are living it right in this, right in our homes. And then other times it's so helpful to have that, like, you know, little blue dot. What is it? I forget who says it, but he's like, you know, if you look at Earth from space, every experience you've ever known, every love, every disappointment, every dream, every fear, everything is all contained on the little blue dot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that was Carl Sagan.
Yes, who
is awesome. And that's another great example of the 360 degree view and how it's so helpful. Meaning when we are more rigidly plugged into a group, call it a religious group, in our case, the evangelical worldview, there tends to be a resistance to allowing ourselves to be exposed to science. And I don't want to say all evangelical is anti-science. That's not true. But there's always this asterisk with science, right? And so you would, if you take a typical evangelical Christian versus a typical non-Christian and ask what would their respect level be of these scientists, such as a Carl Sagan or some of the physicists out there today or whomever it is, it would be notably different, I'm sure. There would be a higher respect for these individuals. And so, yeah, Carl Sagan is definitely one of those guys that I find some videos of him on YouTube over the last couple of years post deconstruction. I'm like, oh man, this guy, he's a scientist, but he is also a very wise individual philosophically and just offers a really compelling view of the human experience with stuff exactly like you're saying.
So I want to go back and ask you, what has resistance looked like for you? Like, I mean, you kind of mentioned it a little bit in the stories that you shared, but in life today, or, you know, in the last year or so, do you feel like you recognize when you're holding on to something that you need to let go of? Do you recognize that sooner? Does it come upon you all of a sudden, like, I've just got to let it, I've just got to surrender this? Or is it a gradual knowing? Like, how do you know when you've got something, you know, a judgment or a belief or a dream or a fear, whatever it is, when you have something that you need to let go of? Like, how do you know that resistance?
In my experience, I don't know that you do. I don't know. I mean, you definitely know it in hindsight of the experiences I've had where, oh, like I really needed to surrender that. It's always in hindsight for me where I'm like, oh, that's right. I surrendered that. And it was the right thing to do. But in the moment, it's so difficult to understand. I think this becomes that territory we're traversing where we feel less comfortable talking about this. And it's also kind of fun, right? Like we can tease this out because I think we can talk about like philosophically or conceptually what surrender is, but to actually understand how to be applying it in our day-to-day life is a totally different thing. So let's, let's chew on that. The first thing when you ask me the question, I guess I will honor the how this happens. Cause you know how sometimes you're talking and having a conversation or something and like something just boom, like pops in your head. When you first asked this question about how do we notice resistance, control just popped in my head, this word control. And so I guess for me, that be telling that that's something I struggle with. I don't know. I don't consider myself a control freak, but my hypothesis is that we're all control freaks in a way.
Right.
We want to be in control. And so for me, maybe that's it, that when I can notice that I am white knuckling through life, like holding tightly onto the wheel, saying, this is how it needs to go. And just being so sure about what is needed, what I desire, I think that is typically, and I won't say that's ever like a boom, oh man, I'm trying too hard to control things, but I think it is a gradual. And then once the anxieties start to come up, then it starts to become more noticeable.
Hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. We're all control freaks in some aspect of our lives. Like even the most laid back people have some area, even if it's controlling their laid backness. Like everyone has some area. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it's funny because I am not one of those people that's all about like the body awareness. I mean, if it were up to me, I probably just wouldn't even have a body. And I really struggled with that. Like, what does it mean to be in your body is like some of the, you know, new agey kind of people say. But the one thing that I have noticed this year is that I think I first recognized resistance in my body. Mm. It's, you know, it's whenever I get just a tight feeling in my gut or in my chest, I'm learning to recognize that now. And a lot of meditations will do that, right? Well, they'll say, how are you feeling and where are you feeling it, right? They'll say like, you know, where are you feeling grief? Where do you feel like when you're mad, where in your body do you feel that anger? Where does it live? And so I think that that's one reason why guided meditations can be super helpful is to help you identify stuff like that. But I definitely notice when there's a tension in my body, that there's something that is happening in my life that I'm resisting. And then also a new one that I've discovered over the last couple of months is whenever I get into that spiral of thoughts where you can, you know, where one thought is like, oh my gosh, that's such a great idea. And the other one is like, no, that will never, ever work. Or for me a couple of months ago, it was like, should we keep homeschooling? No. Yes, we absolutely should. If we do this, like there's this, and even and now, like just yesterday, I was in this of, you know, should I go back to work and do law stuff or should I do something different? Do I pay all my legal fees and just go all in back into the law stuff? Or do I go inactive and just hope that something else comes up? Like when I get into that back and forth, now I'm recognizing that indicates a resistance. And in both of those circumstances, I've had to come back, like with the homeschooling one. I mean, you know, like I was like messaging you about how conflicted I was with homeschooling. And eventually I was able to see them both as just pure ego. And that really what I needed to do is stop and be like, we've already decided to homeschool for this year. Just like be in the moment. Like you've already made the decision. You're homeschooling, just homeschool. Like that's what your life is right now. Do that. And even now with the job stuff, you know, I still feel conflicted about it, but at the same time, I'm not being asked to make a decision right this moment, like dwell today, you know, when I don't have that decision to make. Yeah. For me, it's definitely, where do I feel it in my body? And then whenever I notice myself getting caught up, kind of like what you were saying in those anxious spiral of thoughts, those are my two biggest indicators right now that there's a resistance of some sort that I have to then like work through and figure out what is the resistance about and then deal with that.
Mm-hmm. The experience I had that I shared earlier, that would exactly describe it. This anxious spiraling of thoughts, fear of the outcome not going the way that I wanted it to, fear of a future discomfort. And it truly reached a point where I'm like, I can't take this. I have to let go. So it's funny how this book, Power of Now, we was talking about, and this last chapter of the book is surrender. And he talked about how the large majority of people go the way of the cross to find surrender. And the way of the cross is discomfort, for lack of a better term. And so, yeah, I think that is definitely a key theme. Something comes to mind as you think about other ways to define, and I'm thinking of resistance now as non-trust. The reason I think of that is I think that the antidote to so much of this is trust. To surrender requires a trust. And I think a trust can mean many different things, whether it's trusting that everything actually is fine right now, right? So sometimes we'll have a mantra or something that's like, in this moment, I have no problems.
Yes.
You mentioned that a few episodes ago. And you know what? That can be a knowing, a true deep knowing, but there's also still a trust there. There's a trust that says, yes, that agrees, that believes that there are no problems. But I also think that it's crucial to trust the flow of life to unfold in a way that will be fine. You know, because like your example of what to do with your career path / life, you know, do you go back to working full time and put the kids into school? There is the resistance is coming from a place that doesn't necessarily trust the outcome to unfold naturally. Right. So then there's this desire that you have to control. You, the finite personality of Karen, has to control what happens rather than trusting that life will unfold in a way that is life. Basically it's trusting that it won't necessarily be an uncomfortable experience in the future. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, that is one of the biggest sticking points for me. And honestly, something that I am currently really wrestling with, because I have this sense of trust who, trust what. And it's a huge point where a huge sticking point for me with some of this consciousness and awareness stuff that I've, you know, that I've been delving into, because I feel like I did the whole trusting God thing, you know, trusting the evangelical, like biblical God, whatever. And that didn't take me to a good, I mean, that took me ultimately to deconstruction, is the fact that I realized, like, what is this thing that I am trusting in? Like, how can I trust a God that won't save me from pain, that, you know, won't actually take care of me, like in a real sense. And I mean, there's all sorts of places to go with that, but, you know, and so then after deconstruction, it felt really empowering to feel like I was taking back control of my life again. You know, I had given over all of this power to this God for so many years. And when I deconstructed and let go of all those beliefs about God, I was like, now I can make my life into what I want it to be. Now I can pursue the dreams and the desires that I have without any guilt, without trying to, you know, get God's approval or wonder if I'm in God's will. Like, I get control and power back over my life now. And it was hugely empowering. And then I found this consciousness work and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Now it's all about surrendering to universal consciousness. And like, what am I trusting? Like, what is this flow of life? Yes, exactly. And it feels like I'm back to where I started. And so right now, like, I have this resistance or this, I feel this conflict between trying to force things to happen the way that I, you know, think I want them to, or saying, this is the direction that I want my life to go in. And I'm going to, you know, work my butt off to make it happen this way. That was kind of what I was trying to do with the coaching stuff this last summer. And then there's the other part of me that is just like, okay, you have to embrace the unknown. You cannot know what you want. That's like biologically and just like logistically impossible. You can't predict the future. You have no idea what is going to happen, whatever path you take. And so really you have the option, you try to force something to happen, which there's no guarantee it's going to turn out the way that you want, or you surrender to the flow of life and just like let things unfold, you know, and stay grounded in the now. And I feel really torn between the two. And on a good day, I'm like, just be in the now, just like stay quiet. And then on other days, I have that feeling of like, but how are my student loans going to get paid if I don't get a job? And if we put the kids in school, like, how are we going to, who's going to buy the groceries and who's going to meal plan? And like, I get, you know, I get really caught up in like the practical details. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, like I can imagine, even when I listen to some of these guys like Spira and Toll and Muji and, you know, these consciousness guys, part of me is the person that is like, I have utility bills due every month. And you're just saying like, to sit back and let life unfold naturally. Like, am I really putting all my hope into like a check for, you know, a couple $100 showing up the day before my utility bills are due? Like, or, you know, wondering like, what do I do if a job doesn't come through, you know, and we're still faced with these things. Like sometimes I have that very human reaction of somebody has to do something. I mean, my word for 2022 is going to be trust, because I feel like that is the next big step for me. And I want to be a person who can say, let life unfold, you know, surrender to the flow of life, because I've experienced it that way. And things have, you know, have naturally unfolded. I want to be able to say that because I've experienced it, not just because it's something that I've heard from the consciousness manifestation gurus, you know, and I'm just parroting back the words. And I think the other thing that I am working on is to not judge what the outcome is, right? Because that's the problem, is that I want to say, well, if I do things my way, if I force something to happen, I'll get the outcome that I want, which there's no guarantee of that. And then also I think, well, if I just let things naturally unfold, life won't go the way that I want it to. Like maybe things will naturally unfold and we won't have money to pay our utility bills, or we won't be able to pay off, you know, my student loans when I want to. But like, how can I not judge those things as bad or as devastating? You know, how can I really just stay in that place of letting it be what it is and just continuing to stay in that place of trust? That's something that I have heard is a possibility and an option that I have not experienced yet.
Yeah, that's awesome. Full circle back to the jellyfish with not judging, right? Not judging the results. And that's so easy to say, well, God doesn't care about me, life doesn't care about me, because I got this crappy lot in life. I don't necessarily have a good answer for that, other than it is what it is. I mean, we're resisting the reality of life when we make those judgments, right? Yes. We're resisting what actually is unfolding. If we are, and I don't want to make light of suffering in the world, sitting from my comfortable home in a wealthy
privileged white male.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like the least able to say those kind of things. But the one thing that is undeniable is what is. Mm-hmm. Every moment, what is unfolding is what it is. And there, we can't change that. That's been a really formative thing to my worldview, is coming to that utter clear, that is black and white, right? The utter clear realization that what is happening is happening. And I'm probably belaboring it a little bit, but anyway, as you're talking about trust, I think that's such a good, as we're nearing an end point here, that is such a good point to focus in on here, because I think finding that place of trusting what will happen is maybe the source of living in a sense of abundance, in a sense of gratitude, in a sense of peace and bliss. So then the question becomes is how do we get there? Mm-hmm. And I'm reminded of what Tolle talked about in The Power of Now in this final chapter. He basically set it up that there are two paths. There's the path of the cross, that is, you suffer to a point of just having to let go. Like we're talking about the anxious thoughts mm-hmm. spiral so much that you have to let go. Or the part that I think that we are probably talking about right now, because I don't think either of us are in acute enough mental suffering to just fully let go of whatever the noise going on in our lives is. Then it's finding consciousness. It's finding the present moment. It's being still mm-hmm. and finding it there. That's what we need. So the question becomes is, well, how do we do that? And maybe mm-hmm. that goes into what we've been talking about onto this off to the side is practices, right? What are the practices that we can incorporate into our lives to be in the present moment more, with the understanding that all of this that we're talking about results in being in the present moment. So how do we get there without having to suffer, I guess, is my long-winded question.
Yeah, I just saw a quote from someone, gosh, should I be better about remembering these things, but it said, we suffer more in our imagination than we ever do in reality. And I'm so much more aware of it now. I mean, for me, the practicing the now has really just been a habit that I had to intentionally cultivate at first that I'm getting a little bit better at now. And it really is bringing it back to the five senses and just look around you and be like, okay, there's my bookshelf. Like I'm not actually, you know, we're not actually like, I'm not actually sitting in a car line somewhere waiting to pick my kids up from school while I'm worried about who's going to make dinner. Like that is not actually my life right at this moment. My life is that I don't have a job. I'm homeschooling my kids. Like that is my life right now. This is what I used to do all the time. Mm-hmm. I would either really be living in the past, you know, rehashing an experience or projecting myself into the future, which is what I was doing with those websites. I was like imagining, like living in this fantasy land of, you know, of these websites, instead of being like, what can I do right in this moment? Like, what are the options that are available to me right now where I am now? I feel like it really is true. Like this present moment practice is so life-changing. And I think that's the key to the trust is to just, I mean, I guess this is going to be my approach going forward mm-hmm. is like, just continue to find ways to ground in the present moment and be, and also stay tapped into the awareness. Like over Christmas, you know, I haven't spent much time alone. I haven't spent much time in silence, and I feel more disconnected from that awareness. I'm having a harder time tapping into it and being like, what is the truth of this moment? So that's been like a wake up call to me just to realize I want to invest more into developing a stronger sense of that space. How about you? Have you acquired any new in the now, in the moment practices that are working to help you?
Yeah. The number one go-to I have is meditation. Part of that is because more from what I'm told than what I experience. So I'll just mm-hmm. put that asterisk there that, you know, basically everyone that teaches these kind of philosophies will point us to meditation as mm-hmm. as the number one means to practice this, because I guess that's really what meditation is by and large, is practicing honing in our attention on the present moment. There's plenty of ways to do it. So I'm really big into New Year resets. So I'm actually pretty excited about a few days from now. I've got this new kind of routine and new habits that I'm going to form, also centered around that. Like, how good am I at staying in the present moment? How good am I at executing on these practices consistently, right? Every morning, spending 20 to 30 minutes just sitting in silence, attempting to harness my focus. But something else that's coming to mind as we have this conversation, well, I'll say conversations are great. Like hearing others' perspectives mm-hmm. can help us in jostling some things that might be blocking our present moment awareness. Because sometimes the anxious thoughts are just out of control, right? Mm-hmm. And it takes something jostling it, like a therapy. A therapy, going to seeing a therapist can be extremely helpful to name those anxious thoughts. So this is helpful. But another one, going back to Zen koans, I think we talked about that in episode or two ago. And I'll go back to my telescope analogy. Something that's helped me in the past is pondering things that can't be grasped. And so the telescope is ponder the infinity of space, or ponder infinity or eternity. Mm. And let's just do that for a second. Like think about, try to wrap your head around eternity.
Yeah. Or the endlessness of space. Yeah.
It's like something that literally doesn't end. There is no beginning. There's no end. So stuff like that to me is so, again, destabilizing. And I think through that mind destabilization, it forces us into the present moment. And where this connects with what I shared about from Power of Now earlier is we either go through the path of the cross and intense suffering to lead us to presence, or we get there directly through means of meditation or whatever. I almost think of Zen koans as like you're forcing like a mini death. You're like forcing your brain to let go through some sort of like a very subtle suffering, like the brain not being able to figure something out and wrap around something. It could be considered a form of suffering that leads you to kind of a surrendered posture that says, well, I'm just going to be in this moment and experience it rather than trying to figure out infinity or things that just can't be grasped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reminds me of something that I think Toll said it, that it's a weird concept, but peace is the cessation of thought. Mm. And that awareness is almost like the end of thinking. And that's kind of what you're saying with that is like, whenever you sort of break your brain, like you give your brain something that it simply cannot think about. I watched a video of black holes recently, and it's like, oh my God, like what, like incomprehensible thing that is. And yeah, it gets to a point where your brain, like it's beyond thinking, right? Mm-hmm. It's infinity is beyond thought. Mm-hmm. And that's actually the place that we're trying to get to, which again sounds so weird because we're so used to having such a mind-based like rationality for things. And yet looking at a life situation from that mind-based rational thought place is one, causes a lot of suffering, and two, creates a facade of control. If we think about something enough, we can control the outcome, which just simply is not how it works. Unfortunately. Well,
and if you remember, we were chatting a little bit before this episode, and what really came to me about this topic of surrender is that it's more a what mindset than anything. Mm-hmm. It's a mindset. It is a setting of our mind. And that's really it. It is letting go of the mental functionings, the mental activities that are so prevalent. And so that's, I think, what's helpful about these practices. They help us find a point of saying, my mind has to take a break because my mind is causing, all this suffering. Because that's it. All these anxious thoughts are spiraling in our mind. And yeah, so surrender, another definition, as we have so many definitions today, but another definition is a letting go of mind and just be in this moment, experience the five senses, as you said, look out the window, look at a tree, just observe the tree, don't think about the tree, and there it is. Mm-hmm. And how can we just continue to return to that place? So that's why I think it's so important to have a practice, is because when we start our day with 10, 20-ish, whatever minutes of that, then when those thoughts start to spiral, we can more quickly return to that place.
Mm-hmm. There's this book that I just got for Christmas. I asked for it. It's called The Self-Driven Child. Mm. And it's about the wisdom of letting your kids have more control over their lives. So like, okay, you know, as a homeschool mom, like this sounds like something I could read and get something from. But the first couple of chapters are talking about how the most stressful thing that a person can experience is a lack of a sense of control over their life. Mm-hmm. And it made me laugh because we're getting ready to talk about this surrender thing, right? Which is all about like letting go of controlling everything. And I'm sort of outlining and working on a book idea about how we can't know what we want and how, and from my perspective, like from everything that I've learned over these last couple of years, and, you know, you and I have talked about, is that unknowing, like accepting the unknown and getting comfortable with the unknown is really the only option that we actually have, because we cannot know the future. Not a thing that we do can determine what is going to happen tomorrow. I mean, a million things could happen today that we simply could not predict. Like, we have no way of knowing what the future holds or being able to control that. And we've gotten a little bit right. We can like predict the weather and stuff to some extent, but we live our lives with this whole agreement that we all have a sense of control. And the truth is that there is so little that we can control. And really the only thing that we can ever control is what we do and how we feel and how we live in the very moment that we're in. Mm-hmm. And to think any other way is setting yourself up for disappointment and suffering. And so it was funny to me that this book is like, the most stressful thing is to not have a sense of control, but it's also like any sense of control is a joke. I mean, if it's beyond this present moment, it's a joke trying to hold those things together. And so I feel like this whole journey of deconstruction and surrender is all about accepting the unknown and learning how to be comfortable in the mystery. And that these practices, you know, the meditation and the surrendering, recognizing the resistance and being in the now, that is all just learning to be comfortable with the fact that we don't have a lot of control. And it's like you said, like being comfortable in that flow, learning how to be in the flow and not judge it and not be attached to things, but really just trusting in the mystery and being comfortable in the mystery. And it's not easy. God, it's not easy, especially when our society is in this mindset of like, the most stressful thing is to not have a sense of control. So whatever you do, you have to figure out how you can have a sense of control over your life. That's the society that we're living in. And we're out here being like, but I'm going to let go of that. And I'm just going to like it. You can feel like a freak sometime. When you're not a freak, you're actually the one who is like seeing things clearly, that the present moment is really the only thing that we can ever control. So it's almost like you're living in a more clearer space than others, even though it feels like you're crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That control is one of those things to get to block, that's blocking our access to pure consciousness. So often could get in the way. Something that is coming to mind that I wanted to make sure I squeezed in before we run out of time here is this realization that I had about present moment, but present moment in a reflection of everything that has happened up until this point. To me, that's helpful in a surrendered trusting of the flow of life, because, okay, so this very moment, you know, roughly 9 a.m. on a Thursday morning, I can say with pretty clear mindedness that everything is perfectly fine in my experience, right? everything is fine right now. And what does that mean? All of the years, the decades that have led up to this moment have led up to this moment being fine. Mm. Right. And yeah. So, yeah, there's been pain there, but can I sit here and say, well, I controlled where I am today? No, right. I didn't control the fact that I'm even here. Right. It's insane to think that we, like you're saying, that we have any control. And I guess what I just wanted to insert here is that there can be a practice where we just sit still and reflect upon everything that got us to right here, right now, can be very humbling. It again, just leads you to bask in the present moment and realize that control is so much of an illusion. We think we have all this control, and yet really it's just life unfolding all around us, in us, through us. And yeah, like you said, the only thing we can control is right now, being here. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is a good place to end, to wrap all this up. And I guess, you know, for myself, going into 2022, my practice is going to be trust, is going to be staying in the present moment and continue to find that space of awareness. And by the awareness, I mean the spaciousness, the emptiness, the thing that is probably in the beginning going to feel like a void to most people. It's going to be an uncomfortable, weird, empty void type feeling, but it's really spaciousness. And that is where I want to be spending as much time as I can, tapping into that deep awareness part of myself, because I think that is where the trust is going to be found for me. I just want to, you know, encourage you, Dave, to keep up with your habits. I'm excited to hear more about these habits that you have for the new year. And just for our listeners, you know, to try to identify maybe this week, you know, what are you resisting? And even as you look forward to this new year, if you are one of those people that's like getting your planner out and, you know, setting goals and wanting to do new habits and having all these things that you want to do, check in and ask, where is there resistance to any of that? And how can you accept what is? Like, look at your present moment and hold all of those plans and hold all of those goals loosely. Not get attached to them, but be the jellyfish, you know, have the flow of closing around things and then opening and letting them go, and closing around and opening and letting them go, and not falling into that trap of judgment and attachment, but holding your future plans loosely and just identifying where are you resisting and tapping into that. And as always, please reach out to us. What is our email address again?
frombelievingtobeing@gmail.com.
Yeah, frombelievingtobeing@gmail.com. And also, if anybody is curious about the rest of my jellyfish analogy, my ebook is up on my website, which is inspiredtofaith.com. You can find more about my jellyfish ramblings there. But otherwise, we wish you a very happy new year, and we look forward to being with you guys in the new year. So happy new year, Dave. Hope you, I look forward to reconnecting next week.